Welcome to the VRV podcast, where we highlight different better-known businesses and nonprofits. All right, everybody, it's Justin Clark here, and I am super excited because I've got one of the most amazing nonprofits that I've heard of to date on. And I've got Dr. Jay Grossman on, and he's with Homeless Not Toothless. So, Jay, Dr. Jay, one of your, I think, secretaries, somebody says that everybody calls you down there. Welcome to the VRV podcast. Welcome to the VRV itself. And please, if you don't mind, tell us a bit about your service and how you got into dentistry.
Sure. So I am from New York originally. If my accent didn't come out, I already had my two cups of coffee. So usually I could hide it for a few more minutes. Ever since I was a little boy, you know, I was so impressed, intrigued with people in uniform. There was just something about that uniform. And I didn't care whether it was, you know, the police, the fire department, or certainly the military. So I always had an appeal to be in uniform. So it was kind of a natural progression to go into something in medicine. My uncle was a cardiologist. I was always impressed with, you know, what he was able to do as a doctor, until one day we were out to dinner with him. I'm from Long Island and he lived in Manhattan, and we were, you know, it was a big trip into the city, and it was, you know, he always, you know, paid for dinner with a plastic credit card. My parents didn't have that. And I was so impressed.
Yeah.
But I was really intrigued with his love of humans and his desire to save lives, until one day he his pager went off and he had to make a phone call, and he came back, and I see he was clearly upset because he lost a teenage girl to a rare cardiac disease. And I said, time out. I said, you know, I get the plastic credit cards and the fancy meals, but this dying part just doesn't sit well with me. Now, I'm 10 years old. And I remember going that day, an hour at home, and it was raining outside. It's like the perfect movie. And I'm looking outside at the landscape, not really focused, just saying, what am I going to do with my life? I'm 10 years old, right? I'm like, I'm not going to be a cardiologist because this dying part just doesn't work for me. That week, we happened to have our dental appointment. And my family took raising children as their highest priority. So my mom was a stay-at-home mom, which meant my father was the breadwinner. And he actually, by choice, chose a job that was in town that had no travel, because he was committed to being home every night to give me a bath and being home for dinner every night. So money was a struggle for my family, because they had raising us as more important than going out and climbing the corporate ladder. So money wasn't a concern when we went to see Dr. Mike, because he was my parents' best friend. And I remember walking down the street with him, because we usually went to lunch or something with him after. And here he was this Jewish dentist in a 100% Puerto Rican neighborhood in Manhattan, or right outside Manhattan. And I used to say, I said, you know, Dr. Mike, what, you know, why did you choose this location? And he said, well, it has the biggest need. This was the area that was impoverished, hardworking community that was all blue collar, but they didn't have the resources to take care of their teeth. And he goes, so that's why I'm here. And people used to come up to him and said, you know, Dr. Mike, I know we owe you $20 for that last filling. It'll be another week, but my wife's making me a lasagna tonight. And I looked at that, I go, wow, look at that. You get to fix people medically or like dentally, but people don't die. People don't die in the dental office. And I go, wow, I found my next job. So I remember coming home, my parents were on the couch. I go, Mom, Dad, I want you to know, I was so upset last week. I was going to be a cardiologist. Not for me. I am definitely going to be a dentist. And, you know, I'm 10 years old, right?
Right.
You know, now I'm 57 years old and I still choose to be a dentist. So I've been very, very lucky for the last 47 years. I've been focused on dentistry. So with that, that's how I chose dentistry. So I ended up getting into my first choice dental school, which was NYU. It's still ranked in the top three dental schools in the country. I'm from New York originally, and I was blessed, honored to be accepted at the age of 19. I only had 2 years of undergrad, and they won my undergraduate degree. And it was a dream come true. So here I am, the youngest one in the class. I make it through dental school. And while I'm in the dorms, I meet a girl. And I'm thinking, you know, it's just a dorm thing, right? So that dorm thing, we just had our 32nd anniversary. And she
Holy
is...
Holy cow.
Yeah. And she's from a small town called Santa Monica. So... it did not take much. I mean, I was smitten by the weather out here.
Yeah.
So I moved out here after I finished dental school, and I also finished a residency at NYU. And I had a wife, I had a 6-week-old baby, and I had no license to practice in California. Mm. Apparently, they get very upset if you practice without a medical license. I don't know what that is. So I turned to my wife and I said, you know, I'm going to go to the federal building and I'm going to apply to the three branches and see whether or not I'm an applicant. So I remember walking in and the Navy, the Air Force and the Army have recruiting stations together, you know, right next to each other. And I said to all three of them, I said, why don't you come out to the hall for a second? I said, okay, here's my resumes. I did very well in dental school. I don't do drugs and I don't want you to pay back my medical school tuition. And they all looked at me and each other and they go, what do you want? I said, so here's what would be ideal. I want to see the base that you're going to put me on. I want it to be driving distance from Santa Monica. And I want permission to go home every night.
Mm-hmm.
So they looked and they go, is that it? And I go, that's it. So they both ran into, all three of them ran into their office, made some phone calls. Next day, all called me up. The Air Force and Army were too far away from Santa Monica. Navy came back to me and they said, we have an opening in Long Beach. Now, I actually didn't know the Los Angeles area. And back then, the commute from Santa Monica, Long Beach was about 30 minutes.
It's 2 hours.
two hours if you're lucky. 2 hours if you have a helicopter, right? So, and I looked at the base and I said, okay, this is a commute I could tolerate. Are you okay with me living off base? And they go, well, we're actually having a problem with officer quarters on base, where we have too many officers. We don't have enough buildings for you to stay. We would actually prefer you to stay off base. And if you do that, we'll give you an extra $100 a month to cover your housing. I go, and to me, $100, woohoo! I don't think you could fill up your gas tank for a week now with $100, but good. So, you know, my family had the experience that, you know, Daddy's a dentist and he puts on a uniform, you know, every day. And, you know, I was on base at 7 a.m. and we finished around 3 o'clock and it was fantastic. The part that I really enjoyed the most was I was in from 89 to 91. 91 was the first war, the first Persian Gulf War. I want to tell you something. Every dream, every fantasy that I had of what it would be like to the pride of wearing a uniform. Man, when the Persian Gulf War took place and you were in uniform, it was the most unbelievable experience. I'm getting a chill just thinking about what it was like. I walked in, like, I don't think I bought a coffee that year. There was not a restaurant that I walked into that they said, thank you for your service. And I'm like, you know, you're welcome and it's an honor. And to me, there are no words to explain the joy, the excitement, the pride of serving in the military during the first Persian Gulf War was just tremendous. And I was honored to be in the military. And when the war broke out, I remember we were called in, and this was days before we actually, you know, invaded. And I remember they said, you know, what we're about to tell you is actually considered top secret and you're actually ordered not to share this and you're about to get deployed. They said, let me see if I get this right. I'm not to tell my wife that I'm going to get on a plane and go overseas for 6 months. And they go, yeah, that's right. And then they said, we actually need somebody to volunteer at Seal Beach. And I knew Seal Beach was still in the United States. About this far from Long Beach. Yeah. And I didn't know what that was for. And I go, look, you need a volunteer, I'll volunteer. And they go, Grossman, get into your car and drive to Seal Beach. Here's the directions. And Seal Beach was another Navy base where before the ships pulled into Long Beach, they stopped at Seal Beach. They took the ordnances off the ship and they were stored in safe silos. So when the ships were being worked on, they didn't have live munitions on it. And I showed up. They go, what do you need? They go, well, the base is mostly military police and Navy SEALs. You know, I mean, it's protected. They said, get all of them dentally ready to deploy. So I was the only dentist there. It was a fairly small base. And my job was to get them all, you know, stamped and certified to deploy. And if you recall, because this is going back quite a ways, back in 91, the first Gulf War, I think, lasted 3 days. But the ships, the Navy ships that went out there, they had to sit in that ocean for 6 months because we needed to keep the peace. We weren't actively fighting. But that's a nice way to do a war. You go in, you kick butt for a few days, and then, you know, you sit there and you keep the peace. So I was still at Seal Beach, finished, you know, taking care of everybody. My tour of duty came up, and then there was an opportunity to reenlist. And that was a struggle for me because I so loved serving. There was something that was just so awesome about the entire experience. However, in the Navy, my second tour was for sure on a ship. And I want to tell you, my hat goes off to people in the military that are able to deploy where the person in active duty is willing and able to go on a ship and be away from their family for 6+ months. And the family is willing to support them by having that military spouse not be home. Man, I don't have that in me. I would have done it in a heartbeat if I was single. Like, you know, you talk about, you know, the experience in a heart. It sounded awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, having a brand new baby and literally not seeing that kid till, you know, he was 6 months old.
Yeah. It's
up to people that do it.
Yeah. It's hard because I left when my daughter was 2 months old, came back when she was 9 months. And it was so hard because I came back and, you know, I got injured. And so I couldn't even hold her when I came back, but it was so heartbreaking because I came back to the airport. I remember because it was all separate with my crap. But my daughter turned her head. She didn't even recognize me. She didn't do nothing. And it just tore me apart. But, you know, it was, you know, it was part of the sacrifice that goes through. But you're absolutely right. You have to have, you know, not only the will and drive and the sacrifice that the family makes, but then you got to have that support of the family too. The retired Command Sergeant Major Donald McAllister, I mean, this guy, I praise him so much. He was 24 years is airborne. I don't know how many deployments he still he's got under his belt, shrapnel in his eyeball, but he's been married the entire time with his kids. And it's unbelievable. It's so, you rarely see marriages as is outside of the military last 10+ years. And him, you know, through the marriage, through all the deployments, through all the injuries, absolutely incredible. So it does take a lot. It does take a lot. But you got out in 91.
Correct.
And then you stayed in LA, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Because Santa Monica for one. So Santa Monica is one of my towns that I go to. And it's, as soon as I get down there, it seems like all the stress is just gone. I love it. I just like feel like I can breathe. And it's just, oh, I love it down there. I'll just take away the LA part and keep Santa Monica. Sure. But so you started, so what happened next? So you got out in 91.
Right. And I opened my office in Brentwood, you know, which is, for those listening that don't know the area, it's between Santa Monica and Westwood. Westwood's where UCLA is. So I'm less than a half a mile away. And every day that, I was traveling back to my house, I had to pass the VA. And there was a guy that, you know, held a sign, different guy every day, that, you know, basically said something along the lines of, you know, veteran will work for food, or, you know, something along those lines. We've all seen those signs. And I remember struggling with that, especially when I was recently out, you know, I'm out a few days or a week or something like that. And I'm like, my God, you know, I used to treat these guys for free when I'm active duty. It was a benefit. And now they're not getting benefits. So I started looking into that, and I found a few things that concern me. One is that in order to get dental benefits, two things have to happen, or one of two things. Either you have to have retired, so you had to put in your 20 years, or with medical, I think you need to have at least a 15 or 20%, and you still get medical benefits. So I'm looking at that and I go, wow, that's a pretty high bar. So here you got people that are homeless and or living on somebody's couch, and they got dental issues, and dentistry tends to be pretty darn expensive. So it's like, you know, they're not getting perks. So I looked at that and I go, that's just not right. And I remember reaching into my wallet, and the challenge that I was struggling with was, man, I want to give them a buck or two, but I so don't want that going to drugs and alcohol. Exactly. And unfortunately, it's an epidemic. So right. I'm like, it's, you know, it's a 90%+ of the people on the streets are using, and I don't want to enable that. How do I manage that? Those two different ends of the spectrum. So while I'm in my wallet, you know, literally touching a dollar but hesitant to give it, there's my business card in my wallet. And somehow, I don't know how this happened, my hand went to the business card. And I said, here's my card. I am right there. I'm walking distance. I could give you so much more bang for the buck by fixing it, by getting you out of pain, by giving you a denture or something to make your teeth look good so you could actually interview, by giving you teeth so you could chew on, so you could properly nourish yourself. And those that chose to come in, I knew they were committed to getting off the street. They were committed to their health and their well-being. And it's not something that's being converted to drugs and alcohol.
Right.
And those that didn't come in, that was their choice. But at least it was their choice.
That is really, really cool. Yeah, so we do a lot with the homeless around here. And it's very hard because you see so many signs with veteran homelessness and this and that. And it's really hard too, because who do you really believe in all that? Because there's a lot of imposters out there. And we had a big, giant stand down here. We had over 180 some odd vets come down. And they had to get filtered through the VA system. But it was a common conversation that we had with so many of them, where they were so excited to be getting these benefits, be getting in front of people that are truly wanting to help them out. Yeah. But then it was filtering them out because they were just as mad as the, it's borderline stolen valor issue with these veterans that are claiming to be homeless. They're just riding that veteran wave. But these guys were like truly, you know, like I said, they get vetted through the VA system. And so they were truly veterans that needed help. And you're right. There's so many of them that have the issues with, you know, the drugs and mental, they need mental help. There's a lot that goes into it. But for them to voluntarily come out, for you reaching out, those are the veterans that I absolutely love helping out, that are wanting to better themselves for everything. Right. So with what you're doing is just absolutely unbelievable, and I can't believe it's been going on for so long and I haven't heard anything of this whatsoever.
Well, you know, here's the challenge that we have. Providing dental care is costly, and that's one of the reasons most people don't have dental insurance. If they have dental insurance, it's usually provided by their employer, and it usually has a limit, and the limit is so minimal. The average per $1,000 worth of dental benefits maximum per year. And in my practice, 32% of my patients have dental coverage. The other nearly 70% have none. And I'm in a pretty affluent area, right? This is what. So, with that $1,000, that gets you half of one crown. You know, it's almost not worth it unless it's given to you for free or minimal cost by your employer. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the actual cost, the supply cost and the lab cost is pretty expensive. So even if you're doing it at cost, there's still fees that are associated with it.
Right.
So, you know, in one world, I'm thrilled my nonprofit's been around for 27 years. I am thrilled that we have treated over 60,000 people for free. It's a number that I am humbled by, that I'm proud of. Here are the main aspects, the main components of financing that goes into virtually every business. The first one is the cost of labor. The second one is the cost of the actual rent, the physical building. Mm-hmm. Those two costs are usually very, very high as the total percentage of what every business needs to run. One of the benefits of Homeless Not Toothless is that we remove both of those. every single person who works is a volunteer. So we have zero, well, we don't have zero costs. I'm on salary at $1. So I guess there is a salary, but let's count that as a fairly low amount of actual cost. So there are no salaries in Homeless Not Toothless. The second is there's no rent. And the reason there's no rent is that I donate my office. When you take those two costs out of the equation, now the amount of money that's going into actual patient care or veteran care goes very, very high. And I look at my numbers monthly, quarterly, and yearly, and I'm really proud of the work that we're doing. We have roughly 95 cents of every dollar that's going to the actual veterans, to the actual,
wow,
the actual care. That other 5%, you know, I've got a few dollars that I have to pay for my web, you know, I've got a few dollars I got to pay for my accountant, you know, the cost that you can't get rid of. But for the most part, it's always a single digit every year. It's always well under 9%. So people like that. They like the fact that when they make a donation, that they know that it's going to my two biggest costs, which are supplies and lab costs. Mm-hmm. Things that I have very little control over. You know, I could call them and say, can you give me a break? Which of course we do, but I got to buy supplies. So with that said, as you could well imagine, the need for dentistry in the entire population, not just veterans, is ridiculously high. So we don't spend time or money advertising because I have 1,000 people on my waiting list to come in.
Yeah.
The need, getting patients is not my problem.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
What I need to be working on constantly is fundraising so that when I get a phone call, I could put them in because we got the money to buy the supplies and we got the money to pay the labs.
Right.
So that's our biggest issue. I've been very, very fortunate. We've got so many volunteer doctors. So we're doing really, really great with that. Every week, though, I get another email from a hygienist or a dentist saying, this sounds great, how can I help? We've got the labor. My pitch to a dentist when I speak to them is, look, we're in a blessed profession. We're highly respected, you know, overall in the community as dentists. You know, there are really not scandals that go on in dentistry. We're highly paid, we're highly compensated, we're respected. How about we give back a little bit? So either you could come to my office, so you've got no overhead, or why don't you see one or two vets a week, a month, a quarter? You tell me what works for you. And mm-hmm. almost everybody I speak to says, yeah, I could fit one or two vets a month into my schedule. I mean, like that won't even affect your bottom line, right?
Right.
I mean, it really will not affect your bottom line. So we send a lot of them out after I screen them so I know what they need and so forth. It's raising the funds to pay for the supplies and labs, that's really our biggest challenge.
Okay, so how can we help out with that? As far as the VRV, the veteran, because obviously I have a little bit of connections within the veteran community, but us as veterans, because that's what this is all about, is helping out other veterans, what can we do to help out?
Sure, so, you know, ultimately, we need cash. I mean, it's ultimately we need cash. And, you know, I don't care if it's $10 or $10,000. The truth of the matter is it all helps. We go to foundations and you know, we have a grant writer and so forth. And you know, we're asking for multiples of $10,000 increments. The American Legion has been ridiculously generous. They're one of our hugest supporters. But a lot of the local foundations help a lot also. So, you know, they're writing the big tickets. But, you know, when people go to my website, which is homelessnottoothless.org, there's a donate button and people pay by PayPal. And you know, I don't care if it's, again, 10 bucks, 25 bucks, a few hundred bucks, it all helps. And at the end of the year, you know, we've got a few hundred thousand dollars that's raised in hard cash. We are our biggest line item on our income side is the donated labor. So on any given year, we have at least $500,000 of donated labor that comes in. And without that, we would be dead in the water. So
wow.
It's just, I'm just so fortunate that we have so many dentists. One of the biggest suppliers of dentists coming to my office to work is the university, UCLA, which is a mile away from my office. The dean loves the program, and they send the fourth year dental students to my office, and they get to see what it's like to not only be in a private practice setting, which is something that they're, you know, they're graduating in a few months. They're going to be in a private practice setting in literally in a few months, but I get to use their skill set to work on the vets. So I'm getting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of free hours of free labor, if you could call it that. And it's a win-win because these students are leaving and they go, my God, that was such a great experience. You know, they told me the story of when they were active duty or how they're living on the street right now. And, you know, I got them out of pain, and it's a win-win.
That's awesome. I love you. My daughter had her tonsils pulled down there. I love that hospital down there. Everybody was super nice. Location's not too bad either.
Right.
So, well, that's, hey, real quick, because I love your name. Who came up with the name?
So, Homeless Not Toothless, this is great. So I was taking a course, and the course was on self-development and really was designed to help me kind of pull back my blinders and kind of see the bigger picture. And at the time, I had a complaint. I was so aggravated by the homeless, just in general. I felt accosted. I just didn't like them coming up to me. And coming from New York, where, you know, the homeless population is so prevalent. And I remember the leader of the seminar turning to me and says, well, what are you going to do about it? And I looked, so what am I going to do about it? Well, first of all, what can I do about it? And secondly, why is that my problem? He goes, well, if you're just here to bitch about it, he goes, that's what everybody does. I'm a dentist. He goes, well, do you think they might need some dental care? And I was looking at that, and I just, it was just in the back of my mind, whether I was comfortable, or I wasn't even sure. And then I pass a homeless vet in front of the VA, and I'm about to reach in to give my dollar, and there's my business card. And then it all came together. And I go, oh. So fast forward, it's a few days later, and I'm working on a celebrity. And this guy was a trip, because whenever he came to my office, he had an entourage of people. And I can't tell you his name. I go, you got to stop talking for a second. I got to get into your mouth. And he's always, you know, pitching and talking. And I remember walking in, and I go, and who do we have with us today? The place was packed. There were like four or five people. And this is the crew that names the movie. I go, names? What do you mean names the movie? He goes, well, to come up with a name is really important for a new movie, because that's what helps sell it. I said, let me see if I get this right. There are people that you hire to name a movie? He goes, yeah, of course. Oh, okay, fine. So I stopped and I said, can I borrow them for a second? He goes, sure, what do you got? So I turn around. Now he's lying in the chair. I turn around to the girl. I said, okay, here. I've got this idea. Your patient's right there. I'm talking to his crew. I said, I have this idea where I want to help these homeless vets, and I want to help them. I want to raise their pride and dignity to get off the street by improving their dental health, so that they could get a job, so they don't have to self-medicate, so we could get them out of pain, so we can have them look good, so they can interview for a job. But I don't know what the name of the project should be. Let me see if I get this right. They're homeless, but they're not toothless. And I looked and I go, homeless, not toothless. Just took the word butt out, right? And
yeah.
I go, it took a second. And sometimes the stars just align.
Yeah.
And the producer said, anything else, or can you get to my mouth right now? I go, that was worth the price of admission.
I just think, how, like, being a celebrity and having an entourage of people following you to the dentist exam, I don't, it's not me. I'll just say that.
Is that LA, though?
I mean, seriously.
That's so LA. Right?
Oh, that is funny. Well, that is awesome. I absolutely love it. And I cannot believe 60,000 veterans you've helped. And you've got another 1,000 waiting to get in through the doors. So Dr. J, that is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, our program has evolved. It hasn't just been 60,000 veterans. Several years ago, I was working on a veteran, and he offered to do some help at my house, and I thought he needed, you know, a few extra bucks. And I gave him my address, and he showed up and he did an unbelievable job. And I reached into my wallet and I said, "I'm sorry, you know, we didn't discuss your day rate." And he looked at me and goes, "Really? After the work I just did, you're going to insult me by offering me money?" And I go, "Yeah, of course I'm going to offer you money." He said, "How much money did you put in my mouth?" And I had this pause. He goes, "Yeah, I'm done taking handouts." He goes, "I'm sure I'm not even close to paying back for the amount of dentistry that you've done." "Okay, that was really generous of you. You did a beautiful job. I've got another job for you that you're going to bid on. You're paid in full," right? And he and I became best friends. It turns out that he was telling me some stories that seemed so fictional that I had a hard time grasping the reality. He told me that back in the day, he did some construction work for some celebs, including Sharon Stone. And I go, "Sure. Like, I believe that." Well, sure enough, after he continued to work for us, became great friends, he actually moved into our house for 2 years so that he could continue the job. And my kids call him Uncle John. My cell phone rings. And Dr. Grossman, "Yes. Hi, this is Sharon Stone." And I go, "Yeah." Like, first of all, celebrities don't call me directly. Their people call my people. They set up a time. I close my office, you know, and I see them. And she goes, "This is effing Sharon Stone." And I go, "Oh." She goes, "I understand John's living with you." And I go, "It's a true story?" She goes, "Yeah, he worked on my house, my sister's." I go, "Oh, my God." So she goes, "Listen, I love what you're doing with veterans. What about foster children?" I go, what about foster children?" I go, "Well, foster children are covered by the state. They're wards of the state." And she goes, "Yeah, not anymore." I said, "What do you mean not anymore?" She goes, "At that time, Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, and he took dental care away from foster kids." And I go, "You know, let me look into that and I'll get back to you." So I happen to know how to get to Arnold, and I'm having a sit down with him. And I don't know if this is something that I say I could appreciate or I was upset about, but in the conversation, he said to me, he goes, "Dr. Grossman, California is broke." I don't know if you remember those years when he was governor. Oh, yeah. We were in debt, like on the verge of bankruptcy, right? We had some pretty horrific financial situation. He goes, "We're broke, and foster kids don't vote."
Wow.
And I remember when he said that. I in one world it was a knife in my heart. I was like it was a punch, right? Like. They're kids. And I said to the governor, I said, "Sir, I understand they don't vote, but if you take children that have been removed from their families because their families are either abusing them, incarcerated, or dead, so they're already going to have some mental psychological issues because that's a horrific situation to be in. If you take them out of their home, now you're not giving them dental care. And many of the schools require a dental visit for acceptance into school, like a vaccination. So now we're going to have kids that are mentally challenged because they were pulled out of their families. Plus, you're not going to educate them. What kind of human being are we going to have when they emancipate at 18 years of age?" And he goes, I'm doing the best I can with my limited resources." So I call Sharon back up and they said, "Wow, you're right. I didn't even know about this. So what do you suggest?" She goes, "Well, you're the dentist. What do you suggest?" So I said, "Well, I guess we got to figure out how many kids are in foster care and to see whether we can incorporate them into Homeless Not Toothless." So we met with the director of foster care, and he told me that there are 30,000 kids in LA County. And I'm like, "Sharon, 30,000 kids?" In Sharon's inevitable style, she goes, "You know, I'm tired of people telling me their problems. Give me a goddamn solution." Yeah. So I said, "Okay, great. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a gala. You're going to be the guest of honor. We're going to invite all your friends from Hollywood, and we're going to bang it out of the park and hit a home run and get a lot of money donated. So many years ago, we did a gala and she showed up and Bill Macy was the MC and we got a lot of great press about it. And we got somebody to give us a building east of downtown. So it turns out that when you just take a look at the whole map of Los Angeles, where all the foster families are, about half of them are east of downtown. So like the El Monte area. And we've been successful in setting up clinics there for foster children that are now being treated somewhere around the numbers of about 15,000 kids a year in the last few years.
Now, is that falling under the Homeless Not Toothless, or is this a separate organization?
No, they fell under the umbrella of Homeless Not Toothless because we called the IRS and we said, look, you know, this was originally started for veterans. They go, you know, we have no problem considering children that are living in somebody else's house in foster care. They are homeless. They might have a home to live in, but you could take care of them. So we started expanding the program to treat foster children as well as veterans. Those are the two niche markets that we're focusing on.
Wow, that is cool. And this is why I love talking to people like you and doing all this stuff, because I had no idea all this was going on. Obviously I didn't, but all this was going on as well, because that's a different arena that I didn't really think we really, the VRV would be much part of. But it really, when you start getting in with the homelessness and stuff like that, it really goes hand in hand with it. So I've got to do a thing for a homeless kid here this weekend too. But anyways, Dr. J, like, what do you do that is bad? Because you are just nonstop with amazing things, man. That is absolutely incredible. I'm kind of speechless right now, because there's just a ton you are doing that is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, so I appreciate that. You know, look, I'm a work in progress myself. You know, I'm turning 57 this year, and I've been looking. I'm clear that one of my superpowers has always been that I've been very focused. You know, look, I was 10 years old when I knew I was going to become a dentist. And, you know, I've been practicing for over 30 years and I still love it. But, you know, I've got my own challenges. You know, I've got artificial parts in me that talk to me all the time, multiple surgeries and artificial parts and parts of my body that don't function very well. You know, the joints, the knees, the shoulders, and I have done physical therapy. I stopped counting my physical therapy appointments after it topped 1,000 visits. And I'm still constantly doing it, because if I'm not doing that, I'd be an invalid. And I'm in pain. Last night was a horrifically painful night for me, and I had to medicate. And I don't like doing that because it throws me off. I don't get great sleep. But you know, I was a 9 out of 10 last night, and I'm, you know, just in tears, you know, dealing with, you know, parts that are not what God gave me, but you know, well, I guess you could say God gave it to me, because God gave these surgeons some unbelievable tools to put new parts in my body. And I don't want that to define me, and I also don't want that to limit me. I was at an event that happened to be at a ski mountain, and you know, I saw a veteran, you know, that had no legs skiing, and I'm looking at this device that they made, this harness that they made, and I go, man, I was in tears. I'm getting choked up now thinking about it. I cannot believe the disabilities that are out there and people's ability not to be defined or limited by that disability. So, right. You know, I don't complain about it. I'm, you know, there's some times that my wife says, I didn't realize that you've been hurting today. And I go, I'm not interested in having that be the conversation about the way people look at me. And I've been fortunate in that my physical body looks fine. So like, you know, I'm not walking around with a neck brace. I'm not walking around with my shoulders or out, but you know, I don't want to be defined by that. I don't want to be limited by that. And my, so that I put in my superpower, you know, I'm focused and I'm not defined or limited by my disabilities. With that said, I struggle tremendously with balancing life. If I could work 101% in my nonprofit and never come home, because I am so passionate about Homeless Not Toothless, I would do that. And I'm fortunate in that I've got the most amazing supportive wife who has been, you know, the wind beneath my wings to push me forward and also to bring me back to the home, to ground me, to say, you know, I married you so that we could actually have time together, so yeah, we could grow together, not so that you could be out there changing the world and never come home.
Right.
And I can mentally understand what her desires, wants, wishes is, that it's all coming from love. It's not the way that I'm thrown to be. Mm-hmm. So that's my struggle. How do I call completion to a task such as making Homeless Not Toothless a nationwide name and be a husband and a father?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. No, and I think what you're doing with what you were saying, like how your disabilities don't, you know, define you. There's so many crazy success stories I've seen out there with these veterans where they've had stuff happen to them. You know, they're missing limbs, they're mentally, but they're owning, they're accepting it. And then what's my next step? And they're progressing. Yeah. And it's absolutely amazing. I love hearing that stuff. And I really think you're providing that service to these homeless veterans where you're not only one being like, hey, we truly want to help you out. They're going to have that because really, 99% of these veterans out there love the camaraderie. They miss that camaraderie they had in the military. So then you having that, giving them that, but then saying, look, we're solving this issue with your teeth. And I'm sure the self-confidence in them, because honestly, my teeth are a mess. Won't even talk about that. But giving them that self-confidence and being like, you are somebody, you are... I don't say special flower, it sounds weird, but no, you're worth something. You can get a job, get you off these streets. And I just love that. That is truly incredible. And it's not just doing little handout things for, because obviously you've been around for so long. You're not here for social media likes or getting your face in front of the camera. You're truly helping these people out, which I am so much behind. It is so incredible because I see so many things where we'll be out doing events and it's just people wanting to do selfies and what can they get up for, yeah, for to get the most likes. I'm like, no, let's, because it's truly something remarkable when you help somebody out that is less fortunate and, you know, a couple months down the road and they give you a call and they said, hey, because of this is what really was my first stepping stone to the person I become today. Yeah. And I love that. So really, Dr. J, man, thank you so, so much. It's absolutely incredible. So
And thank you for what you do. And thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm honored to get to meet you and to share this with your listeners.
No, it's great. So anything you need from me, and real quick before we sign off, why don't you give another shout out for people that want to donate, help out your mission?
Sure. So the name of the nonprofit is Homeless Not Toothless. A short URL would be HNT for Homeless Not Toothless, HNT.dental. Get you to the same spot.
Okay, awesome. And we'll put all those links up in the comments below this podcast, and we put it out on social media too. So, Dr. J, man, thank you. I can't thank you enough. So it is truly incredible. I'm excited to see what we can do for you, and hopefully someday we can get down there and I can meet you in person. It'd be great.
I look forward. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, you have a good one, sir.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Thank you for supporting businesses listed on the DRB. You can find this business and other vetted businesses and nonprofits at veteransreferringveterans.com. The listings on the website have been personalized with product photos and direct contact information. Thank you again for your support.